Hey everyone, this is John. This is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is CoronaCast, day three, or episode three, I suppose, of the CoronaCast. We are now in day six of me and Des, my wife, home from work with the kids. The kids, I think I mentioned on the previous show, they're not back in school until the 15th. We have no official word on when we'll be back at work. And it's we're starting to get into the slog of just trying to find things to keep ourselves busy from day to day because so many things have been shut down or temporarily suspended. A lot of outdoor activity things. There are still a few like parks and things that are open. We took around a walk around a lake park with a nice boardwalk, and there are a few people there going for runs and such, and there's one older lady that was deliberately trying to avoid our two kids, trying to keep her social distance away from children. I don't blame her. Children are cesspools of germs, so probably a good idea to try to keep away from them as much as possible. But a lot of other things have been shut down. I'm not sure if all of the natural springs around here, all the swimming areas have been shut down completely, but that's other places we're going to be avoiding for the time being. A lot of beaches have been shut down, and for good reason. There's a lot of irresponsible people coming down for spring break, and they're taking a big risk, not only for with their own health, but the health of other people, by doing things like that. So we're going to be avoiding beaches for the time being as well, which means that we're spending a lot of time indoors. My parents do have a pool, and they live relatively close by. So the past couple of days, the kids have been spending some time over there, which has been nice. Give us a chance to, have some alone time away from the children since we're seeing them a lot. And also gives us a chance to kind of get things around the house in order, things that we've been putting off doing since we moved in almost a year ago at this point. But one of the biggest, one of the other things that's been impacting our day-to-day lives at this point is just being able to go out and just get food somewhere in grocery stores, the couple nearby. The weirdest thing is chicken and ground beef have been hard to get. Most everything else we've been totally fine, though. Oh, eggs. Eggs also, for some reason. I guess I don't know what it is about those three things. With people think that they're going to run out or they're going to be hard-pressed if they don't have fucking eggs in the house. But the other thing is we went out just to a local Tex-Mex place a couple days ago while the kids were swimming at my parents' house. And we walked in and found out at the time, we thought it was closed initially because we drove by a back window and saw all of the chairs up on tables. And then when we drove around the main entrance, the open sign was there. We walked in, found out they were takeout only at that point, which it makes sense. It's cautious, which is what people should be at this point. And then there another day, a couple days later, we went to a local ice cream place, and same deal. They had very limited seating to begin with, but I couldn't actually sit down and be in the restaurant. I had to order and go, which again totally makes sense. And that's how we ended up walking around that lake boardwalk. So a lot of the entertainment comes from video games, which is good. Also streaming movies, and we've been, we still get the disc rentals through Netflix, which has been really handy over the past couple of weeks. And there's a red box down the street at 7-Eleven that's close to us, within walking distance, which I use with some frequency now. It's pretty handy for renting movies for the children as well. It becomes an activity for them, something that could get them out of the house for a few minutes to go rent a movie or go bring the movie back. We have tried to be cautious with money. You know, when we bring the children down to a 7-Eleven, they always want snacks and stuff. And we do try to be cautious with how much money we're spending on other small things like that, because it's difficult to, it's impossible to know at this point when we're going to be back at work and how the paycheck situation is going to work out when we get into mid-April. But, you know, a lot of these indoor activities have been filling up a lot of our time. And I've actually been, you know, probably been playing on the Switch probably as much as normal. You know, I'll get maybe a couple hours a day in there. And, you know, the girls also like to play. Mika's gotten into Animal Crossing, and Ripley still likes Mario Odyssey, and they both like Runner 3. But the biggest thing that I've been playing recently is Breath of the Wild. I got back into it. It's a third playthrough. And I've been tinkering with the idea since it came out, or since they expanded on it, to do a master mode run. But I just decided to do a normal run through. It was a little, a bittersweet to delete my original save file, my first run through, because I wanted to play through under my profile, mostly for vanity's sake, and rack up the huge amount of hours in my profile, which affects nothing. I could have just created another profile and had a third run through that way. I wonder what the technical limitations were for that game to keep it from having multiple save files under one profile. Not that it's such a big deal, it doesn't really matter. Just every other Zelda game, I think then it's typically three, isn't it? I think three save files for most Zelda games. I think Majora's Mask had two. For some reason, it might have been a limitation of the N64 and being a more regimented schedule within that game. Probably took up a lot of data, relatively speaking, for an N64 game. But yeah, for Breath of the Wild, didn't have the multiple save files. But you know, I haven't gotten far. I just dropped off Great Plateau after being pretty thorough, looking for, you know, Koroks and trying to, you know, re-familiarize myself. Even though I've played through that game two times, I played through it, of course, when it came out in 2017, then did a replay in 2018. So I haven't played it in over a year at this point. And one of the things that's just always impressive about that game is just how thoughtful they are with the geography and how they draw you to certain places and teach you how to do things, how to manage the geography without ever having to like drop too much text. I mean, you do get a couple tutorials with the old man on the Great Plateau a couple of times. But you know, just really simple things like, hey, here's a gap, here's a cliff, and so some more terrain across a little bit. It's way too far to jump, and you don't have a sailcloth yet, so you're not going to be able to fly over. But what they do is they put a tall tree right next to it and just drop a woodcutter's axe nearby and trust you to figure it out. And something that's just really impressive about Breath of the Wild is just how much they trust the player and trust themselves, their own design, to know that, hey, if we do these things, if we place these things in these places, the player will intuit what they're supposed to do and what they can do and find solutions and probably find the solution we want them to find on their own, thinking through it themselves. And it is very impressive design to know that we're going to lead you in this direction and teach you things about the game without ever having to come out and say, this is what we're doing. Another thing that comes to mind on the Great Plateau in that manner, on that note, is just how they teach you how swimming affects your stamina. Because at that point, really early on, you don't have to do a ton of climbing. You can, of course, but they don't ever require you to do any climbing. But what they do is when you get that first tower and when you get your first shrine goals, and you can set your markers, what they do is they put one, they put the closest one nearby across a broken stone bridge, and you can, you know, work your way around, or you can try to swim your way across. And they put you in the water, and, you know, they have the button prompt so you can dash, but they put it, like, so you have to be super efficient with your swimming in order to make it across on one stamina bar at that point in the game. And it's a really smart way of showing you, like, hey, you need to think about how far of a distance you're trying to cross in order to manage it, in order to have success managing your stamina and being able to cross the terrain that you're going to cross. You have to do a bit of planning, or at least have a mindfulness about what sort of obstacles you can overcome. And the way they handle cooking, the way they introduce cooking, like, you can just start, like, baking up things in the stone pots at any point within the game. You can do it right from the beginning, because I think there's a little cauldron, a little stone pot by the old man when you first encounter him right down the pathway. But one of the ways they introduce, you know, mixing things together is having that prompt, the little diary inside the old man's house on the Great Plateau, where it'll tell you, like, hey, here's ingredients you can mix together, and they make it fairly obvious what the ingredients are supposed to be, and that teaches you a couple of things about how to, like, gather resources. Okay, well, where would I find something that's seafood? And in the water, of course. And where would I find meat? Well, you know, there might be an animal that I can gather meat from. So it kind of teaches you about hunting in that way. And just giving you, like, there's something that you could totally miss if you're not being, you know, observant on the Great Plateau. Something that you just totally bypass this old man's, you know, broken down shack, that just points you in a couple of different directions, all with, like, some simple lines of text that kind of just nudge you onto what things you can do. Things like, you know, going to catch fish, and, you know, figuring out the best way to obtain the fish, and going on hunts, hunting boar and deer and stuff to get meat. And then getting the ingredients that you got from that harvesting and putting them all together and making something that's going to be a more efficient food item for restoring health and giving you resistances to, like, cold and damage and all these different things. And they do it. They do these things in such a way, like, you can't overstate the subtlety, which is a funny sentence, of how they just allow you to discover these things on your own. But the idea that game also got me thinking, as well as a bunch of other podcasts out there, Nintendo podcasts, talking about the third anniversary of the Switch. That was earlier this month. And, you know, doing, like, best of lists and, like, how far the Switch has come and grading the console and this and that. And, you know, just comparatively to, you know, almost every other Nintendo console, the Switch library is just so robust. You know, and even if you don't count ports, like, you just look at the games that came out on Wii U and GameCube. We had a bit larger of a library if you really hunted down for things and were okay with, you know, a few more casual experiences. Even, like, the first-party Nintendo stuff also had a much more, like, beginner-friendly design sensibility to a lot of them. I talked about that a bit when we talked about Skyward Sword at the end of last year. You know, I think there are, of course, exceptions to that. Games like Donkey Kong Country Returns was a major exception to, like, how they sort of had this desire to make their games friendlier to people who, you know, hadn't played games in a long time or never played a video game before, and they picked up the console for Wii Sports. But, you know, the Switch is such a strong contrast to the Wii, which is funny. That's kind of, it's the console, the home console that has the most robust library since the Wii. Well, it's just such a strong contrast than the way that they've just thought about their design philosophy for these games and given their audience, like, the gaming audience, much more credit than they've given them on, like, the Wii. where everything had to be, you know, designed so that it had that broader audience in mind. And it's that sort of broad audience, that Blue Ocean strategy, has seemed to gone away, or at least shifted, on the Switch. I think it's the biggest change from Nintendo over the past 5 years. And, you know, I think they wanted to make that change on the Wii U, which is why it was titled Wii U, because they wanted to have that balance between broad audience and more gaming enthusiast audience. Who, you know, to be totally fair, on the Wii, there was a reluctance or hesitation or even an abandonment of certain video game enthusiasts from the console because of the types of games that were the most high profile on that console. But it's paid off really well for them on the Switch, and the challenges of the Wii U were many. And they were probably better served making a clean break from the Wii if they're trying to go back for that gaming enthusiast audience that they're going for on the Switch. And that was also a challenge of hardware. You know, it's such a similar design to the Wii, the fact that it still used the Wii remotes, which, you know, for someone like myself, for the Nintendo enthusiast, was great to just have all these controllers accessible and to have that backwards compatibility and access to this big backlog of games. It's something that I've been doing a lot recently while I've been not working, is going back and playing more Wii games on the Wii U. You know, I mentioned on the last show that me and Dez were playing through Darkseid Chronicles, and I had that, still have this goal in 2020 to replay some Wii games, because a lot of these games I never played more than once. Right now I'm playing through Super Paper Mario, which is a game that I'll probably talk a bit more about on the retro show, because the Wii, you know, almost qualifies as retro. You know, it's a lot of these games are 10 plus years old, so, you know, it's just about there. It's nearly retro. But when you think of the Switch and all the different types of games, first party, third party, when, you know, you have the big third party efforts, game like Octopath Traveler and Valkyria Chronicles, and a lot of these ones that I really like, and of course the independent games have come such a long way from where they were, you know, 10 years ago. These are much more robust experiences. I mean, we got that, well, I talked about that Indie Direct, or Indie Showcase, as I like to call it, when I last recorded. And it's like, you look at a game like Baldo, or The Last Campfire, or what was the ninja-looking one? Blue Fire, maybe? I think that's what it was called. You look at those games, and those games would have been full, like, retail releases. Like, not like necessarily, not even back on, like, the Super Nintendo or the N64. Like, a lot of these independent games would have been, games like The Messenger or Braid or, you know, Hob. Like, Hob is a bad example of what I'm trying to draw here. But, like, a lot of your 2D side-scrolling, Hyper Light Drifter, Cave Story, like, all of these games would have been really, like, robust, impressive, like, retail full AAA releases back in the Super Nintendo. But now you're looking at these independent games that they're coming out with, like, they showed at that Indie Showcase, and a lot of these games are, like, robust, that would have been robust AAA experiences on, like, the GameCube and the PS2. So independent games are making huge leaps forward in the scope and the just amount of content that you're going to be able to get. Baldo looks like it's going to be a game that's going to take hours and hours to get through. And I'm all for having short games. I've recently played through Stella, which is a game that I'll talk about on the official show, because that's a new release game on the Switch, a new release independent game. And, you know, there's still room for those kind of games. Games like Inside, they're smaller in scope. and been very simple mechanic, and they kind of have a very striking visual style or narrative device that they want to deliver. And there's still plenty of room throughout those in the world, but just the fact that these small independent studios have the ability, have this proliferation to make these much deeper experiences is very, very, a very good thing for video games. Because when you look at the big AAA games and AAA studios making these games, there's a lot of, I would say, excuses about why they need to do things like have microtransactions or subscription-based things, why they want to have like this constant engagement in something like a live service. Right. And the excuse is like the scope of making games has become so large that they have to have this constant engagement and a constant revenue stream from single games because it's such an investment to make one of them. But I think that gets disproven, like that necessity gets disproven time and time again when you see all these independent games having these success stories. The scope of these large AAA games has gotten way out of control and should be reined in. And having these independent games available and frequently releasing, coming out all the time, like it just goes to show that there's a much healthier way of building a video game ecosystem on any platform than what is currently happening within the AAA side of the ecosystem. So I didn't prepare anything for, you know, the 3-year anniversary for Switch. Maybe that's, you know, something that if Wes and Ryan are interested, maybe I'll get their thoughts on, you know, some memories or some favorite things that have happened on the system over the past several years. I'm just scrolling through my software on the Switch, and there's just some really impressive stuff. Like the library, I'm not going to go through game by game and list these things, but the library is so robust, and there's so many things on my wish list that I never got to. I believe it's still over 70 games that I would like to get to at some point. Like, I'm going to be playing Switch, you know, well after the next console comes out, just to catch up on all these different things. Like, there's so much good stuff. You know, now that I'm looking at my library, I remembered something that I did want to mention. I wanted to go through Breath of the Wild again, because it had been a while since I had played any of it. And one of the things that, the biggest things that prompted me to try to plug in Breath of the Wild again and delete my save file and start a new one was Ryan brought over The Witcher 3. He had his card with him and forgot his actual system, so we plugged Witcher 3 into mine, and I started up a game under my profile. And, you know, after a lot of dialogue skipping, I was able to actually get into the game. And the way Breath of the Wild introduces you to just exploring and moving throughout the world is much more to my preference than the way The Witcher does. Because Breath of the Wild just, you know, you emerge from a cave and you look over everything and the game just says, go find something to do. Whereas The Witcher 3 sets you on this path like, hey, get to this village, talk to a bunch of people, learn a bunch of things, you know, kind of fuss with these mechanics as you try to figure everything out and how your combat is going to work. And it's a much more regimented experience, and then it gives you all these markers on your map, as opposed to where Breath of the Wild allows you to make your own markers on the map. And then, like, you go to, like, follow a side quest, and sometimes it's as simple as taking out an enemy encampment, which is something that, you know, is also present in Breath of the Wild, but it's hardly ever marked as like an actual side quest. There's just enemy encampments you encounter, which, you know, just makes it so much more enticing to discover these things. Like, hey, there's an enemy camp, and there's a treasure chest here that I got from killing all the enemies, and it was great. And sometimes in The Witcher, you follow a side quest, and it just basically kind of chase the narrative beats. Like, it'll mark things on your map, like, okay, go here, and he'll... The main example, I should just get into it rather than try to dance around it. There was a ghost at a well or something, and I need to go to the well and figure out why the ghost was haunting it, and then, like, get the bracelet that the ghost dropped down the well and put it next to a corpse. It was a lot of narrative for very little amounts of gameplay, just kind of like chasing your little goalposts or waypoints from point A to point B a couple of times. And that sort of thing, like having those story-focused side quests might be, you know, fine for some people. This is not really my thing. I was kind of skipping through the text. So, okay, let's get to the point where we can actually explore this area and go down this well and look around. You know, once you actually get down there, you know, you're fighting the controls a lot of the times to do things like engage in combat or swim. Swimming is awful. Swimming feels terrible in that game. You know, just kind of like moving throughout the world, like Breath of the Wild does such a better job of giving you interesting geography to move around and things to climb on. Because The Witcher is kind of like, okay, you're in this big space, go run across everything and go over there. And they give you things, like you can pick up like little trinkets or plants and shit that you can then sell later. So there's a economy to going around and poking around at things. But man, like, as I'm just kind of walking through these areas in Witcher 3, I'm looking at everything like, you know, Breath of the Wild would give me much more interesting things to do and look at and interact with than this game is giving me. And Breath of the Wild just they did such a smart thing with those Sheikah Slate powers and giving you the bombs and the magnesis and the stasis and the cryosis, I think is how it's pronounced. Just giving you ways to manipulate the world and giving you ways to interact with puzzles and approach things however you want using your tool set. It's still like the definitive experience on Switch, even 3 years later. It's still the absolute number one must-own game for anyone that buys the console. Other than that, you know, I've been jumping around from a lot of games. Like, I finish off Mega Man 02. I'm playing Dragon Quest 2, which is a game that I picked up on sale, used some gold coins. I'm going to save Dragon Quest 2 for the retro show, though, so we got some topics to go through there. And, you know, like Breath of the Wild is still my number one played game on Switch, under my own profile, followed by Xenoblade Chronicles 2. And then number three, which I've Xenoblade Chronicles 2 have only played through one time. It was a single playthrough. And number three is Fire Emblem Three Houses. It got to that number three spot really quickly. It passed by Mario Odyssey, which is, of course, the number four game, as that makes sense. And I started up my fourth run through of Fire Emblem Three Houses, picked the Golden Deer House again. I went and I got the Ashen Wolves characters and training them up using some side missions. I don't know how much I'm going to engage with them in the regular missions. I'll probably just stick to the core group. But a lot of the characters I'm taking in different directions. For example, Byleth, main character. You know, they strongly nudge you in that direction of the Enlightened One, which, God, I must have taken that path twice, maybe even three times. I can't remember what I did in my Black Eagles run through with that character. But they push you so strongly in that direction. This time I'm actively resisting it. I'm taking my professor character in a totally different direction. I'm going like a soldier route as a spear user, and I don't know where I'm going to end up. It would be really cool if I could go into a Falcon Knight class, but I think that's exclusive to female characters. I'm not with a male character this time, so I might have to pick something. I don't know if I'm going to go Wyvern Rider, because Claude will end up as that Barbossa, and I'm going to stick with that. And Hilda does really great as a Wyvern Rider, so I don't want to triple up on those. But those characters, I took Hilda Wyvern Rider last time, and I'm going to end up as a Wyvern Lord again. I'm going to try to take a slightly different path, just so that she has different skills available to her, because, of course, what the first thing I did was I took my renown and I started pumping them into skills that I'd previously mastered with these characters, so they have more things at their disposal as they go. I thought about giving them like max weaponry. That was taking a little bit too much renown though, so I upgraded ones that they would need in order to class upgrade quickly. So they'll just kind of like, maybe by the time we get to the end, I'll be able to get them all to like the S plus for all their main weapons. But, you know, we'll see. I'm not really super concerned about getting that deep into it. But, like, I'm trying to go Lorenz. Last time I went Dark Rider, kind of a Dark Mage route. This time I'm trying to go with a Mortal Savant route, because that character doesn't... both of his strength and magic, I think, have like a 40% growth rate. So, you know, taking him Myrmidon and then Hero, I think Hero and then Mortal Savant, I think will give him a pretty decent chance of having pretty good strength and magic to really take advantage of that class. I'm definitely going Myrmidon. I got him in that class right now. And I think maybe Swordmaster is the next one I want to do, because that gives him a better chance of getting some speed, because that's something that was a challenge last time as I was taking them through like a cavalry class, because they do not, they have detrimental speed growth when you take them into that class. So I'm trying to avoid that. Leone, I also took a paladin route last time around. This time I'm going Bow Knight with her, and I'm going Bow Knight through the archer sniper route, so that, you know, she's got a good chance of building up her dexterity and speed and luck, which I think would be useful for her. She's already got very good speed and strength growth rates on her own. But because she is going to be my archer sniper, I'm taking Ignatz a different route. He has good dexterity and luck on his own, and I'm trying to manipulate it so he's got some good speed. So I'm also taking him Myrmidon, Thief, and then Assassin to see if I can really take advantage of building his strength and speed upon his dexterity and luck, which is already pretty good. And he'll still have like his sniper skill. So, you know, I'll probably still end up using him as an archer primarily, but, you know, having those sword skills also there with him, and that those bonuses from having those more physical classes, I think will be good for him. Raphael, I'm still taking up to War Master. But last time I took him up to War Master, I went through the armored units. And this time I'm going through the Brawler Berserker route. Or sorry, the Warrior Berserker route. Focusing more on his axe skills rather than his Brawler skills. So that'll be pretty fun, I think, for him. He's a character who's already getting like really tanky, even without the armored classes. So like having the heavy armor reinforces those strengths, but he doesn't really need that heavy armor, those heavy armor classes, in order to build up his defense. He's really good on his own anyway. I say, am I forgetting anyone? Oh yeah, Lysithia, still going Grimory there. She is a character who, you know, her growth rates are almost all in like magic and resistance, so trying to take her down a different route is really not ideal for her. And then Marianne, I'm taking her up to Holy Knight again, because, you know, having having two Gremories, you know, it's fine. It works out fine. But just for some variety, taking her the Holy Knight route, and she is slightly more capable as a physical unit than Lysithia. It's a bit of a bummer that I won't be able to have a Falcon Knight unless I start using like the Ashen Wolves, because you can get a Dark Flyer. Constance can become a Dark Flyer there, which might be fun to use. But I don't know, I'm not going to start the run over. I'm 4 or 5 missions into it. But if I had thought a little bit further ahead, I probably would have started with female Byleth so I could go up to Falcon Knight with that character. But anyway, I'm sure it'll all be fine. Still not sure what I'm going to do with that character, but I'll figure it out. So those are probably the two games I've been spending the most time on recently. Me and Ryan were supposed to record yesterday, which is why I didn't do a Corona cast. But he's been snowed under at work and pretty much working until the late hours of the evening every weekday because of just how volatile things can be in relationship to his career. But we do have plans to get together on Sunday. So we will do a nice retro show, have a bunch of topics to tackle there, and possibly even an After Dark. We'll see if there's any topics we feel like talking about there. That might be, you know, well, we'll see. That might be difficult with baseball canceled, with basketball canceled. Well, we'll see if we have any. We haven't watched a lot of movies, so maybe there's some stuff we can get into about that. But anyway, probably do one more of these Corona casts and have that posted before we post any of the main line of shows. But anyway, thanks for listening to me rant. Till next time, everybody.